So today is our last class, and we have the final on Monday. Sometimes the finals are late, for example on Thursday, but it's probably good to have them on Monday so you can get done with it. On the other hand, of course, I guess you have less time to prepare. So that's a trade-off. So let's do a quick review and see what we have done in the semester. So the final is would be comprehensive, and last time we didn't get around to discussing that non-assignment. Now you were supposed to do it, even though we are not going to collect that. So we want to talk about that, and also let me see, maybe I have it here. Okay. These are some of the things we used last time in the class. Everyone has a copy of this. Just for your convenience, it is there in your book. So when looking at this material, it is convenient to have this in front of you. Other thing that I handed out was the design of the multi-cycle design. Everyone has that? So, but I think I may have a couple of extra copies of that also. Everyone has this? Now, just to summarize our two designs. So we have done two designs. So we took a subset of MIPS instruction set architecture, and we had a single cycle design. And in our single cycle design, we had things like two memories and other specific things. And we came up with a control unit that was combinational. And we looked at the aspects of timing. And we noticed that in the design, there are some instructions that will go through several blocks. So the single clock cycle has to be sufficiently long to accommodate the longest instruction. So this was not an efficient design. And then we saw a multi-clock cycle design. And in this design, we had a somewhat more compact design. We used less hardware. And the reason we were able to use less hardware was that since we were not going to do everything in a single cycle, so the same unit could be used for different things in different cycles. So we didn't need that much hardware, and and of course different instructions took different amount of time. And okay, let me ask this question. Let me see if you guys are ready. Well, incidentally, there is a quiz you are working on, and it is due Saturday? Okay, so that quiz you're working on. And as I said before, the quiz, of course, is a kind of a random sample of things. And the idea is that you will find, look at the questions, look at your notes, book, or think, reflect on the questions. And so that way you will kind of probe some of the things we have done. Okay, let me ask this question. For the multi-cycle design, how long will the longest instruction take? How many clock cycles? You have that information? Okay, how many of you say 10 clock cycles? Okay, how many of you say 5 clock cycles? Okay, you say 5 clock cycles? Why?
I would guess that's the number of parts it can go through in the binary tree.
Okay, you are looking at this chart here. So you are basically saying that the longest path that any instruction has to travel through happens to be the one that includes state 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. So that, and then you go back. So basically you have 5 states, and that's the longest. And you are in one state for one clock period, right? So you are saying that the longest would be 5 clock cycles. Okay, what would be the smallest? Okay, how many of you say 3? Okay, that is the right answer. Because as you can see, 1, 2, 3, actually there are 2 instructions. There is also a the jump instruction and branch on equal to instruction. So both of them take 3 clock cycles. But that is not a problem because so now different instructions take different amount of time. And so this is a more efficient design. You use hardware more efficiently. And you are not sitting there wasting time. And we designed the control unit. Now the control unit happens to be a sequential circuit. So basically, and then you design this sequential circuit just like you designed sequential circuits earlier in the class. So you come up with your state diagram, find out the inputs and outputs, get your truth table. Use optimization if it is applicable. Perhaps if you are implementing that using a PLA, and so you will have a combinational block, and then you will have the feedback. You have some storage elements there, and as we have said that here we see 10 states, so you have to use at least 4 flip flops.
So, was 5 clock cycles the right answer?
Yeah, that is true. So that is the correct answer, right? Everyone agrees with us here? And another thing we did was that in this design, we used a register transfer language to describe the flow of information. So you should be able to read the register transfer language. So, for example, we saw that for instruction fetch, it was this. And they both happen at the same time. And you can easily figure out what control signals you would need to use activate for this. So if you look in this diagram, then you can see that there you have the from memory address value program counter and you load that in the instruction register. So there's a control signal called instruction register write. So would you have to activate that control signal, instruction register write? Yes, because you are writing into that register. And there is a control line that controls whether you want to write into the instruction register or not. So you should be able to figure out how you can implement operations like this using a diagram like this. So so for example, sometimes you want, it is a mux here. Sometimes you select this, sometimes you select this, and you should be able to figure out when do you select which. So this was our multi-cycle design. Are there any questions on the two designs? Okay, how do actual designs look like? So you have basically seen the basic ideas, and of course the processors that are currently being designed, they are of course much more complex, and but some of the basic concepts are the ones that we have seen here. And these also tell you how instructions are actually implemented at the microarchitecture level. Okay, so let us go back and do it. Oh, no. I guess we need to go back to the question, which says that you have to implement jump register instruction. And this is for your single cycle design. And this is a diagram that you have to modify. I had handed this out. Okay, so who has the answer? Okay, let me ask this question. Who did not get the right answer? Who did not get a satisfactory answer? Okay, you all got the satisfactory answer? Okay, so we don't have to discuss this. So, okay, how will you implement the jump register instruction? Now you have used that instruction, right? So for example, when you return from a subroutine, you jump using a register. In other words, you take the address from a register array, and here you read contents of the registers. So here is your read data 1 and the read data 2. So this is where you are reading the two registers. And of course, as you know, these are 32-bit lines. So you have to read, when you jump using a register, now what is the instruction format for the jump register instruction? Okay, so we look it up here. And it says for jump register instruction, jump using a register, okay, JR, and that is R format, and it gives the opcode there, 08 hexadecimal. Operation code is 08 hexadecimal. Oh, it's actually the function code 08. So you have the operation code according to this is 0, which is 6 zeros, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, 6 zeros. Now, how do you do a jump? Now, you will notice that the register to where you jump, looking at this card here, has to be specified in register RS. This is a register RS. This is a register RP. So somehow, you need to take the address here and use it to jump. Right? Okay, how do you jump? Looking at this diagram here, remember the next instruction is pointed by the program counter. So if wherever from you want to get the next instruction, you need to put the address in the program counter. So somehow we need to bring that address into the program counter. And now, how do we bring this address into the program counter? Now, remember, there are sometimes in the program counter, you simply put program counter plus 4, which let us say is here, and then you have something here, you have the multiplexer that you are using for branching. So you either branch or don't branch. And this here is the signal which you are deriving using the branch control signal. Remember this part? That's how we branch. Okay, but question is, how do you jump using a register? So we need to use this and get it into the path. So easiest thing would be to insert a multiplexer and take this so now that the register contents are available, and you need to have a control signal here. And the control signal we have to call, let's call it jump register. So in your controls unit here, add something called jump register. So when this signal would be 1, contents of this register would be routed to the program counter, and hence the next instruction would be fetched using the register that you have read. Now, most common use, of course, as you know, is when we use jump register using register 31, right? Because register 31, that's where we save the return address. So first part of the question is, whenever you want to, sometimes you design things from scratch. Sometimes you design things incrementally. So here we are doing an incremental design. And so you need to figure out what are the things to be added. So first question is, do you need to add something in the data path, or is the existing data path adequate? You have the route to go from point A to point B. Now, in this case, we find that there was no route, right? There was no way we could have. So, we have to create a route. Put the multiplexer there, bring it here. So, you need to add to the data path. Now, that's the first thing. Secondly, you need to remember the table that described this circuit. In that table, we will need to include a control signal, which I'm calling jump register. And this control signal, now we have this table somewhere. We have the table. Okay, here. So you have things like register destination. Now this is the new signal we have added right after things we had called ELU hop 0 and 1. So when you add the jump register instruction, now that combination corresponds to the input. Let me take a look at this here. Okay. Oh, actually, I just noted in the green card for a jump register, actually the opcode is 08 hexadecimal. The leading zero that it says here, that is actually incorrect. This is just like for the load instructions, this has a printing mistake in the card. So for this you need to generate the appropriate control signals, and you will notice that the jump register control signal would be zero for all others, but would be one for this instruction when you jump using the register. And what are other signals that you will activate? So you have the other signals include register destination, ALU source, memory to register, and in fact, just like we had done in the class for the jump instruction. So the signals are going to look exactly like what we had for the jump instruction. And then you had 0000, and then we had this is where I don't cares, and this of course has to be. So in other words, you need to slightly redesign this circuit so that you can generate this control signal. So this is of course described by this. So any questions on this design? Okay, now let's go back to the beginning of the course. And let's see what things we have seen. So the final is going to be comprehensive. So we will include everything from the beginning. So we start by taking a look at combinational circuits. And we have seen that the digital circuits, we have combinational and sequential. So you can build a combinational circuit using individual gates, and we had also seen blocks like multiplexers, full adders, PLAs, those are all combinational things, and sequential elements are flip-flops, and then your read-write memory is a sequential element. It's a special type of element, but still a sequential element. Registers are sequential elements because they have the capability to store information. Any questions on combinational and sequential circuits? So we will have at least something on this in the final. And after that, we looked at arithmetic. And we looked at numbers. So we looked at integers, and which are both signed and unsigned. And we saw how to take care of signed numbers. You actually did it before, so we didn't spend too much time on it. And we saw floating point numbers. And for floating point numbers, we saw the rationale behind the conventions they adopted. So we have the floating point numbers, we have the biased exponent for the floating point numbers. And then you have the usual format, and then you have some special formats which are given. This green card, remember to bring this, so this would be allowed. Oh, the floating point formats are given somewhere here. Oh, this table here, IEEE 754. And so you have, usually the numbers are normalized, but sometimes they could be denormalized numbers. And then of course you have some special cases like the zero is all zeros. So you should be able to convert a decimal number into floating point and floating point number into decimal. So you should be able to do this type of conversion. And we also saw some floating point. We saw addition, and we saw multiplication. So you should be able to do those things. And after that, we saw the instruction set architecture. And so we saw things like the instruction formats. So you should be able to work with the instruction formats. So for example, if I ask you to assemble an instruction, or if I ask you to figure out what an instruction in binary is supposed to do, you should be able to do that. And then you have the programs. You should be able to write assembly language programs. You should be able to read assembly language programs also. And you should be able to trace through the programs. So you should be able to trace how the data is flowing. You should be able to trace addresses. So for example, sometimes we set up pointers that point to different things, and sometimes we adjust the pointers for some of the things. So you should be able to trace those things. Or you should be able to write programs that do those things. Okay, and let's see, what else did we do? And then, we saw the processor design. And of course we saw those two things. So in the final, we could have digital circuits, there could be a couple of questions from here. It could be perhaps a couple of questions from here. And of course, these are just rough numbers. There could be a couple of questions from here. And there could be a couple of questions from here. So just to give you a rough idea. Questions. So questions about, I guess, the sensitive comprehensive. So, okay. Do you want to give me suggestions for the final, just like we did for the midterm?
What about performance?
Pardon? Oh, I forgot for performance. Oh, thank you for reminding that. Yeah, I forgot the performance. Yep, that's important. Performance. I guess if we have to be in the same town as Intel and AMD, how can we not include performance, right? We have to talk about performance. So if you go somewhere and say that you are from Fort Collins, so they will expect you to be expert in computer performance, right? Okay, so. So performance is there, and of course trends. Of course everything is included, and there could be maybe a question from here in the final. And it is possible that some questions could be easy, but some could be hard. And in any case, I guess it's relative. So. As I had mentioned, that at the end, I guess we add up everything with appropriate weight, and then I take a look at the scores and see if any adjustment is needed, and then I assign the grades. Questions on final? So it would be a 2-hour final, and it is here on Monday morning. Let's see. 10 minutes after 9, is that correct? Yes, so 10 minutes after 9. Bring your green card here. So that would be the only thing allowed. If you need any other diagrams like this, if you need it, I might supply the diagram or parts of it or some hints, whatever you may need. So you should be able to read information from these diagrams. You don't have to memorize them, but you should be able to read these diagrams. Oh, calculator, yeah, that's a good question. Let's see, anything that you need calculators for? You might need it for the trends thing, because we have the exponent there. Make sure you can do logarithmic calculations. Because whenever something raised to something, some of the calculations may require you to take log. Yeah, let's okay. So the calculators would be allowed, but if your calculator has built-in capability of converting decimal numbers into binary, you are not allowed to use that feature. And if you have any other fancy capabilities in your calculator. Let's see. These days things have become hard. So I've heard about people. I was reading some news. In some places they have some problem with people using their cell phones. So no cell phones. I guess there are no, if you have a calculator built in a cell phone, that would not qualify that, right? So you have to have a simple, legally allowed, which means it is allowed for, what is that? What are those tests? Like the SAT. So the type of calculators that are allowed for SAT, those are the ones that you can use. And it would be a 2-hour test. So probably it might have something like 8 questions, and each question would have a few parts. So would be now our regular our midterm tests, how long were they? Well, they were 1 hour 15 minutes, right? Okay, so this would be longer. So this would be slightly about 25% longer. So I will try to make a test which will which should take you about, let us say, 1.5 hours. But of course, everyone has their own style and their own pace. So we will see, I guess, how it turns out. Okay, so let me invite questions. So if you want to, so go ahead, write a question on a piece of paper and give it to me, and I might use your idea in the final. You should be able to write small programs. I'm not sure how they will look like, but you may have to write a small program. For example, I write a program that perhaps sorts a set of numbers, or a program that finds the smallest number, or maybe a program that counts the number of negative numbers in a list. So this should not be too long. But you should be able to write, you are expected to be able to write assembly language programs. And definitely you are expected to be able to read assembly language programs.
Formulas and performance.
There is. You need to know how to use. You need to know the meaning of. Now, what was that term we called? Number of instructions per cycle. Number of cycles per instruction. Now you should be able to use a CPI. So if I tell you that you have these instructions of this type, and find out the CPI, or if I tell you CPI and some of the other things, you should be able to calculate the expected execution time. For trends, you should be able to figure out the exponential relationship. So you need to remember, now how did we specify that? We said something equal to this is something multiplied by alpha raised to m.
Was that the format? So you should be able to work with, I guess, this type of expression. Yeah, so if you have any suggestions for the question, so yeah, I will collect those. This includes programs with subroutines, and of course recursion is included. So you should be able to write or follow recursive programs. Recursion is of course very important in computer science. Any questions for the final? Or any questions about some of the things you have done recently? Okay, you guys look ready for the final. So I will see you Monday morning then. But I'll be here for a few minutes, so if you have any questions. Yeah, I think you ask him. I think he should have the intro. Oh, okay, thanks. Oh, incidentally, I should mention, remember to submit your project report using WebCT. So if you have handed it in hard copy, also you need to submit it using WebCT so that I can, that would be my collection that I can preserve. Thanks.